You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 2nd September, ShopRite results due within the hour. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Moyaha. The Bidvest results market didn't like. Local vehicle sales, if we've got a quick minute to touch on that. Highest levels since October 2019. Motors and CMH obviously in that spotlight. Rob Field from RCL Foods results. New look business, segments doing well, although some better than others. Tough conditions. And then we're going to chat with Stanlib Asset Management, Impact Investing. How do they drive that through private markets? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, AI spend versus the real world. Serious questions have been asked about the scale of investment in AI and how this compares to broader economic realities. And Business Day, Treasury and Reserve Bank strike policy truce in unified stance. Rare joint statement comes after a warning fallout from a tug of war risked undermining monetary policy. Short version, they're going to announce the new inflation rate as soon as possible. Morning markets, US was closed last night. Over in the east, mostly red. Sydney down 0.2%. Tokyo is the exception, up 0.25%, with Hong Kong down 0.5% and Tencent off 0.2%. Commodities, all green. Gold futures, 3,562. Brent, 68.42. Platinum, 1,432. And palladium, 1,162. The rand is 17.62. Bitcoin, 110,200. And top 40 opening call, red open, 185 points or 0.2% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Moyaha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. Bidvest numbers out yesterday. We are in the heart of reporting season. Bidvest perhaps matters because it gives us a really good insight into the local economy. And to be clear, we have had no growth for, pretty much zero growth for a decade or more. Running through the numbers, it looked like the pain was sort of freight, renewables, Adcock, Ingram. Your thoughts around the results?
Yeah, morning, Simon. So a couple of things from the numbers. Yes, there were some business units within the Bidvest portfolio that didn't perform as well. But if you look at just what the business has been up to and the fact that you bring up that local performance, the local side of the services business actually outperformed the local economy in South Africa. And that's something that's quite commendable for a business that operates in the services space in an economy like South Africa's. So overall, looking at the Bidvest results, I think the fact that you're still able to grow revenues by 5% when you're above 100 billion rands in revenues as a figure, that in itself is quite an interesting telling point around the strength of the business. The other side of the conversation that we can look at from a business perspective, I mean, the business went through 9 acquisitions in the last financial year, 20 acquisitions over a 24-month period. So they have been very deliberate around what it is their strategy is and how they're executing on that strategy. Now, yes, those acquisitions are going to take quite some time to filter into the bottom line. Integration has to happen. The businesses have to start performing, and eventually we'll see it start to come through in the profit numbers. But for a business to be comfortable enough to take on that many acquisitions, to maintain their cash position and improve their cash generation position, clearly means that these acquisitions at some point will filter through and the business will do well. So I think the market was a bit harsh around how they felt about the results at a headline level and perhaps maybe at a surface level. But there were some nuggets in there that I thought were really interesting. I mean, one of the other ones was the fact that their renewal of the terminal access that they have at Richards Bay has just been extended by 25 years. So clearly the business from an operational standpoint is trucking along. And that expansion into North America is going to be big for them. So they've got quite a bit to be excited about. They're optimistic around South Africa and their global operations. And I guess perhaps the market just wanted maybe a little more in this particular reporting cycle.
Yeah, almost 15 billion of cash generated from operations. I mean, it is a giant business, and I like your point around those acquisitions. They are acquisitive, smaller ones, mid-sized ones, but they do work over time. Changing track, we vehicle sales out for August, 51,880 units sold. That is the highest level since October 2019. We're seeing a slow and quiet recovery in vehicle sales. And I was looking at the share prices, CMH and Motus, latter with results out later today, both been moving higher. There's a bit of a, we're buying cars.
We are buying cars. The question, though, remains, are we buying new cars or are we buying used vehicles? Because that's also another sign that the strength of the consumer might be coming back a little slower than expected or a little faster than anticipated. On the Motus results, I actually have a conversation with Motus later today, and I want to get a sense of that, a sense of what the inventory looks like now. Have the car manufacturers and car companies decided to produce less to maintain what they've got or to get rid of the stockpile that they do have? But all in all, vehicle sales is a good recovery sign, showing that more people are having to, whether having to purchase the vehicles for work purposes or choosing to purchase the vehicles for leisure purposes, at either or means that we are in a better position as the consumer starts to recover. Now, we're a long way away from a recovered consumer in South Africa. Let's be clear on that. But it is the signs of positivity that we like to see if we are looking at the strength of consumer. The same way when we look at retail numbers from the retailers as they start to give those in this earnings cycle, we start to see things like how big the credit books are, how much they are generating from a cash perspective. The likes of Mr. Price are very cash generative as businesses, and so they would have smaller credit books, but they still tell a very important sign around the consumer, and the same with the vehicle sales numbers. So I'm looking to see how those vehicle sales are being split between new and used vehicles, and how we're likely to see that from an outlook perspective going into the new financial year.
Yeah, and certainly We Buy Cars has been running for much of this year, as you say, a lot of perhaps second-hand cars. We'll leave it there, Jimmy Muyaha. Appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today. As those vehicle sales hit an almost six-year high, are the stocks worth a look as we start to get sales recoveries? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Rob Field, CFO of RCL Foods. Results out for year-ending June, revenue up 1.8%, HEPS 28.5% and dividend 60 cents from 35 cents the year earlier. Rob, kind of in a sense, the sort of first year of sort of the new RCL Foods, you've disposed of Vector Logistics, unbundled the Rainbow, and not a bad set of numbers in what is a, you called them in the announcement, subdued market conditions. It's tough out there.
It is very tough out there, Simon. Thank you for having me on your show. And not much improved from the last couple of periods, to be honest. But it does mean that we reflect on these as a pleasing set of results in the circumstances. And so focusing on what is obviously now a slightly smaller portfolio without Rainbow and Vector, but a very focused one.
You talk around another tough period, but I mean, the numbers, you're getting margin improvements, and you make the point that that is more about efficiencies and saving initiatives. In other words, managing what you can as opposed to, you know, the consumers and inputs and the like.
Absolutely correct. We recognized a while back that there are not many levers that are, from the market perspective, going to bring some relief for us. And so our strategy is very focused on what we can control. And we have two big initiatives. The main one that delivered this year was our continuous improvement, which, yes, is effectively a cost and efficiency drive across all of our operations, which has been very fruitful. So that's contributed most, because if you look across the input commodity areas, there hasn't been the relief that we had been hoping for over the last couple of years. So we've had to dig deep.
Absolutely. Is there much for, in the years ahead, or have you kind of done what you're able to do? I mean, obviously, there's always a drive for efficiency, but maybe the easy parts have been done, or is there still more you can get in the year ahead?
No, we're confident that there's more to come. As you unearth these things, you and there's lots of cross-pollination and learning across the organization. We still believe that there is more to come in that space. So I'm excited about that prospect.
You're looking at your divisions. Baking, really strong. The underlying EBITDA up 55%. Yeah, it was efficiencies. It was innovation. Because also, you are picking up some volumes in that space.
Absolutely. There's four business underlying operating units within that business unit. And so they've all enjoyed a better period this year. Admittedly, off coming off a lower base of the prior year, but a very pleasing performance in terms of a turnaround. So, yes, strong continuous improvement savings delivered in all of those parts of the business and starting to claw back on some of the volumes and challenges that we had there. So, definitely not a destination for us. It's but a vast improvement.
Groceries, I mean, up 19.1%, which would be a great number, but baking at 55 kind of takes the star of the class. And here you talk around, you're getting operational efficiencies. You mentioned load shedding. Is that load shedding impact on you or on the customer? I imagine that's impact on you.
That was us, and it was largely in the prior period, which is what's bringing some relief in the current year. It was specifically related, or where it was most felt, was in our pet food business, and we were unable to produce the lines that we needed to a year back. And so we're still busy restoring the service levels to the kind of the pre load shedding kind of era. But that business, the overall groceries portfolio, both culinary and pet food, have performed admirably in the period. They're coming off a higher base. The absolute return profile is better. And so even a 19% improvement is a very good performance in the period.
And you mentioned pet food, and it's something, you know, I was actually chatting over the weekend with someone, you know, 30 years ago when you went to a vet, it was just to get shots for your cat or your dog. But it's a fundamentally changed. There are dedicated pet shops. There is ranges from food to toys. The pet space must be an exciting space for RCL Foods.
It is a very exciting space, and we're well positioned. The investment we did 5 years ago in our facilities meant that we could bring the best technology to this market at a local cost of production. We're well represented across all the different tiers with our brand portfolio and all of the different sectors that pet food is sold in. The buzz at the moment is all around the specialty stores that are opening up plenty. And so we're trying to keep up with that their rate of growth. There is some cannibalization into traditional retail as a consequence of that. But yes, we are very excited about the category.
Sugar's the third. You said a solid a result. It was underlying EBITDA was lower. Here, there's a couple of moving parts. I mean, imports, lower global prices, weaker demand. A tough space, still profitable, but tough.
Yeah, still in absolute terms, a very good performance by the team. Although it looks like a material reduction off the prior year, the last 2 years have been record profit years for us. Yeah, and again, put that in the context of what's happening in the balance of the local sugar industry. So it remains a very good performance. The team have delivered very strong operational results. The crop is looking good. Yields are looking good. So we're in a good space operationally, as what we refer to as what we can control. The external factors, yes, are the ones that have turned against us in this period. And the worrying for the future is the extent to which, you know, imports are going to continue to be allowed to come into the country and will displace our local production. And so that's has not only an impact on us, but the whole sugar industry and all the growers.
Yeah, I mean, it's a common theme. A couple of CEOs, CFOs I chat to, imports are proving a challenge. A last question, strong cash flow, I mean, indicated by a big increase in dividend. There is strong underlying cash generation in the businesses.
It's been a good year, this one. We delivered nearly a 2 billion rand free cash flow, which is a record for us and a really good performance. And so, absolutely, we're well positioned. We refinanced our debt package at a slightly lower level during the period. So we've got kind of capacity sitting a headroom on our debt package. But the cash flow is a focus for the business, and it was a very good delivery this year.
We'll leave it there. Rob Field, CFO, RCL Foods. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Trading Zain Ismail, Portfolio Manager, Fixed Income Private Markets at Stanlib Asset Management. Zain, appreciate the time. Impact investing. It's a phrase I think many of my listeners have heard. It's also a phrase I think a lot of folks are not quite au fait with exactly what it is. So let's start with the simple question. What is impact investing?
Yeah, Simon, thanks for having me on the show. Impact investing, in a nutshell, is an investment approach that aims to generate a positive social and environmental outcome whilst generating a compelling financial return for investors. So it's developmental in nature, but without having to concede on returns. And you may know that concessionary finance is usually the domain of developmental finance institutions and philanthropic foundations, whilst impact investing is directed at commercial investors. So some of the main themes include climate change, obviously a big consideration, improving the quality of life for individuals. So we're talking about quality housing, access to quality education, access to healthcare, and then another big theme is financial inclusion. So ensuring that a greater component of the population is able to access finance with a view to improving their future prospects.
I get you. My question was, they're going to be, do and should retirement funds allocate capital to impact investing? And I want to switch it because my sense is they absolutely should, because they get the return, which is important for a retirement fund. But doing societal good, I mean, it makes you feel nice in your heart, but actually doing good for society is good for the broader society, economy, and hence the retirement funds.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, so I do think that they do invest in impact investments. Do I think that they've done enough investments into it? No. So I think there's still significant scope. And, you know, I'll give you a sense of the opportunity set a little later on. But I mean, two reasons that stand out for me for retirement funds to consider investments into impact investments, right? So one is they're typically quite concentrated to traditional listed equities and bond markets for obvious reasons, right? Yeah. Now, issuers in this space have made significant strides in terms of ESG, but that does not necessarily translate into tangible societal uplift, certainly not in the short term, okay? And in addition to this, listed markets, as we know, can be quite volatile. And so over time, I think it's fair to say that equities and bond markets have also become more correlated. Hence, globally, you would have seen a shift towards an increase in allocation towards alternative investments. And South Africa is lagging behind international norms on this front. Now, impact investing is a form of an alternative asset, whether it's via private equity or private debt. The behavior of the underlying investments differs from the traditional asset classes we've mentioned. And so you've got an opportunity for a low beta asset class in the first instance. Then you've got a potential to generate alpha, so outsized returns. And critically, to your point, you give life to tangible impact. That's the first reason. It's just a good diversifying asset class that gives you this tangible benefit for your communities, okay? Secondly, and coincidentally, majority of retirement fund beneficiaries in SA happen to represent that cohort of the population that stands to benefit from the type of assets that we target through impact investing. A good example, one of the biggest focus areas for us is access to quality, affordable housing, right? Whether it's via ownership or rental, the vast majority of the target market are nurses, teachers, municipal workers, members of the security and policing clusters. So retirement funds have an opportunity to influence and benefit from investments that are directly linked to their members. And it's our view that when an investor aligns their portfolios with their values and strategic priorities, it fosters a sense of purpose alongside profitability.
I get that absolutely. And I like that. It is that sort of in sync with each other. To put it in perspective, I mean, how big is the opportunity set locally in South Africa?
Yeah, it's a good question, but also not an easy one to answer, to be honest, because impact investing straddles multiple sectors and credible data is, you know, notoriously difficult to come by, especially in a South African context. But let's use a few kind of examples based on some basic research, and I'll reference live transactions to illustrate the scale. Okay. So we'll just reflect on two. Access to energy, because that's a big talking point. SA produces 42 gigawatts of power at present, somewhere in that region. SA is a high energy consumptive country, and given our population growth and then given the investments required to facilitate economic growth, the projections suggest that we're going to have to increase capacity by 50% over the next decade. A large percentage of that, I think it's in the high 80s, of energy is produced using coal, which isn't sustainable if we want to meet our various climate change objectives. Okay? So hence the move into renewable energy over the last decade and a half. And in terms of South Africa's integrated resources plan, government's looking to invest into 9 gigawatts of solar power and as much as 18 gigawatts of wind power over the next 5 years. I mean, those are substantial amounts. And to give a sense of the actual rand value at play, so take a live transaction we're looking at present. We're currently exploring an investment into a solar plant that will produce in the region of about 240 megawatts of power. Now, this is considered a large renewable energy project, okay? The total project costs are estimated to be 4.5 billion rand.
Wow.
But in order to achieve the 9 gigawatts of power generation I mentioned earlier, you've got to initiate like almost 40 such projects, or put differently, 170 billion rand of investment into solar projects alone over the next 5 years.
I mean, those are staggeringly large numbers. I hadn't actually thought about breaking it down that way. And there's other areas, there's health, there's a ton of others which are going to be giant as well. And then where does the asset manager fit in this? Because to your earlier point that, for example, the retirement funds, they typically focused on, you know, unlisted space as well. Where's the asset manager in driving this impact?
Yeah, so like ourselves, you do get private markets asset managers out there, or even traditional asset managers that have a focus on alternatives. And your private markets asset manager plays the role of mobilizing vast amounts of money needed to build infrastructure faster than any individual government or company or DFI or bank can provide. And the truth is, the scale of the investments required is such that we need various public and private sector institutions to get involved. The other aspect to consider is that investments carry risks, which is why it's essential to use an investment manager that performs thorough due diligence. They need to regularly assess and report on performance of the underlying investments. They've got to have clear legal agreements in place to manage underperformance or at worst defaults. And because private markets investments are unlisted and thus not readily observable, the manager needs to make an initial and ongoing assessment of recoverable values throughout the life of the investment.
Absolutely, because it does come back to, as you say, it is that unlisted space. We'll leave it there. That's Zainab Ismail, Portfolio Manager, Fixed Income Private Markets at Stanlib Asset Management. Zain, appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday. He's from Sanlam Private Wealth. Gold moving higher and higher still today. And we asked if you're bullish gold. Two-thirds said yes, absolutely. We're split between no, I'm out, and no gold for me. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Motus results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.